Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Motivation Mindset. I'm Risa Williams. I'm a therapist and the book author of The Ultimate Time Management Toolkit and other books. And this is a podcast about getting stuff done without all the stress. And if you'd like to work with me on getting stuff done, I have two Get Stuff Done groups coming up in March, both on March 15th. The first is Get Stuff Done Goals Group, where we work on all sorts of goals together. That's at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. And the second group is just for moms, the Get Stuff Done Moms Group. This is a time management group just for moms to help you get those busy schedules simplified down. So if you'd like to join in, go to patreon.com/Risa Williams and you can see all the groups and workshops and classes there. And now for another episode on getting things done without all the stress. Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Motivation Mindset. I'm here today with a special guest, Stephanie Safarian. She is the podcast host of Sustainable Minimalist, and she's also a book author and a mom. And we're going to be talking today about ways to declutter and practice minimalism in a practical way. Welcome, Stephanie, to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited for you to be here as well. I was on your podcast and I had so much fun talking to you about practical tools. So talk to me a little bit about your journey as a minimalist.
I'll give you the short version.
All right.
I guess I'll just say that prior to having my first daughter, I was your average consumer. I bought what I could afford. I liked buying new clothes. I liked going to the mall. I never really thought about the impact of all the stuff on my well-being or on the planet or on my wallet. I never really thought about it.
Yeah.
But then I had a child and my husband and I and our dog, our two cats, and now this infant, we're living in a 850 square foot apartment in Boston. And with the baby came all the baby stuff, the clothes, the frilly dresses, the gear. And we very quickly felt like we were being suffocated, being pushed out of our own home. And that was the first moment when let me just say too that I was a new mom. I didn't have much free time. I wasn't sleeping well. But the moments of time that I did have, I spent those moments organizing the stuff, finding places to put away the stuff, cleaning the stuff. And yeah. So the stuff had just such an oversized impact on my life, on my well-being. And that was the moment where I really started to think, all the stuff, not just the baby stuff, but my stuff as well, is it adding to my life or is it taking away from the quality of my days in valuable ways? So
yeah,
that's the moment.
I like that. I can really relate to that. I talk a lot on the show about stuff and just how we become custodians of our stuff. It's like a relationship we're in with our stuff that I don't really think people think about. You know, are you in a good relationship with your stuff or are you in an unhealthy relationship with your stuff? And what are some warning signs you might be in an unhealthy relationship with stuff? Well, maybe it's starting to feel like a burden. Maybe it's spiking your stress so high every time you're looking around and looking at all this stuff. And it's creating not pleasant emotional space for us to be in on a daily basis. How would you assess that? You know, at what point did you realize maybe you weren't having such a healthy relationship with stuff?
I would say it was the moment I started decluttering. And, you know, so this was circa 2015 and the Minimalist documentary, The Minimalists, Minimalism, Everything was huge.
Yeah.
It was around when, and so the solution everybody was saying was just declutter your home, because if you declutter your home, you'll declutter your mind. And so I jumped on board. I said, yes, let's do it. I started with the baby stuff first because she couldn't argue.
It's easier.
Yeah, it's so much easier to tackle her closet full of dresses than it is to tackle my own closet, right? So
right.
This moment where I'm standing, quite literally standing over a pile of stuff, everybody's stuff that I didn't use, didn't need, shouldn't have bought, shouldn't have wasted the environmental resources to create because I'm not using it. I'm not getting any value out of this. And I would say that was the moment when I realized I bought all this stuff. I acquired and accumulated all this stuff because somebody else or some other entity had told me I needed it. Maybe it was an app, it was a friend, maybe it was a this or that. And so I accumulated all this stuff because I thought that's what I needed to be a good mom, to be an attractive 30-year-old, like whatever it was. And at that moment, when I'm literally standing over this pile of stuff, that's when I realized that, wait a minute, it's time to be more intentional about what I allow into my home. It's time I be the gatekeeper.
Yeah. I had a similar moment. I went through a Marie Kondo phase when that was very popular. And I did the thing where you take all your clothes out. And at the time, I had two little kids as well. So the stuff was already just avalanches of stuff, some of which I didn't buy. It had just been dumped on me by other parents and relatives and who meant well. But you just start accumulating all this baby stuff that you're never going to use. And I had a moment where I put all my clothes on the bed and it was this mountain of clothes. And I realized I had bought the same type of t-shirt a bunch of times. Like I had multiple things that had been shoved in the closet of the same thing that I didn't know I had. And I realized at that point, this is a messed up relationship with stuff. And like you said, everyone thinks it's about decluttering, but that's only half the puzzle. The other half is, what are you bringing in? Because you can clean out the closet and it'll just get filled up again.
I always call that the hamster wheel of decluttering. Yeah, you know, we go through all this hard work of clearing out the stuff that's no longer serving us. And then our house is so airy and bright. And ooh, I have more free time to do the things I love because I'm not spending so much time taking care of and managing the stuff. But then the advertisements creep back in, the comparisons with others creep back in. And so
the stuff creeps back in.
Yes, a lot of people just go out and buy more stuff to fill their recently decluttered homes. And so for me, decluttering is great. Reassessing your relationship with stuff is better. And what's best is, you know, acquiring stuff when you need it because you've determined that you need it, not because somebody else told you.
Yeah. So let's talk more about that because that it sounds simple, but it's so emotional. And we get so hooked into social media and television or magazines, whatever. We're kind of blindsided by how much we're being affected by all the stuff being pushed on us. And especially as women, I think we're sold a certain amount of like future feelings based on that stuff. Advertisers are using that to buy the stuff. Like, you're going to be so happy when you're on vacation. You should buy this now, even though we don't have a vacation plan. We should buy all this vacation stuff just because we want to get in that mindset of, well, I'll get to use it someday when I go on vacation. So we have these thoughts we tell ourselves, like, someday I'll use that. Someday I'll wear that dress to some event. I don't know what that event is or if it'll ever happen, right? But I better keep it in the closet and keep hoarding these things for future moments.
In 2024, where e-commerce is huge, we can buy literally anything we want with the tap of a button. We have our credit card saved. Like, it could never be easier to buy. And let me also say to the ease with which we buy. You know, we have advertisers and influencers telling us we need this, that, and the other thing. And we also have the credit industry, which tells us, which wants us to believe that everything, this, that, and everything is also affordable. And it's just not true.
It isn't.
So there are so many barriers that have been broken down to purchasing in 2024. And I always suggest that we build them back up. So this is asking yourself really intentional questions before you buy. This is inserting a pause before you buy. So like, let's say you're scrolling on social media and there's one of those targeted ads. Targeted ads by definition are tailored just for you. So that makes it even harder to look away from, right? So let's say you see a targeted ad, you need it, you want it, you gotta have it. Put a pause on it. Take a screenshot and say, I'm not doing anything about this dress or this whatever it is for 24 hours. Go back in 24 hours. I guarantee you, if you look at it with different eyes, the need, gotta have it, will be gone.
So yeah,
one is putting up barriers. And yeah, life, like our capitalist society does not want any barriers to purchasing. So it's on us for our own best interest, our financial best interest, our well-being, our homes, status, like we don't like for all those reasons and more, we have to do the hard work of putting the barriers back up to purchase.
I like that. We have to put barriers so that impulse to buy and collect new things doesn't automatically kick in. And time is a good barrier giving yourself time away from something often kicks in that part of your brain that can make a more logical decision or a more practical decision based on the space you have. So let's go back to decluttering. Give me some practical tips if somebody's just feeling very overwhelmed right now by all the stuff in their house. Where do they even start?
Great question. So I always suggest you start in the easiest space imaginable. I liken it to weightlifting, right? You're not going to go into the gym after being a couch potato for 20 years and pick up the heavies. You're not going to pick up the 50 pounds, right? And so if this is your first attempt at decluttering a space, you're not going to go to the basement with all of your deceased grandmother's stuff. You're just not going to do that because you got to work up to that. So I always suggest an unemotional room, a place where there's probably nothing that's going to tug at your heartstrings, nothing that's going to trip you up emotionally. For most people, these places usually tend to be the linen closet or even the medicine cabinet if you're feeling really darn motivated. And you probably will, because in decluttering, positive efforts, like small wins accumulates, they snowball. And so if you're feeling really ready, I suggest maybe you tackle the master bathroom, but start small, easy, and slow. And nobody ever listens to this advice, but just trust me.
Yeah. Well, sometimes bathrooms can actually be triggering. I work with a bunch of clients who for a long time got stuck on bathroom organization because they'll be like face creams or perfumes, or they get stuck in that, I spent so much money on this cream that I'm never going to use because I have so many creams, right? So part of it is also like getting really honest with yourselves. How much cream can you possibly put on your face in one day? Like, how much do we actually need?
That's right. And I would also just add to that, for me, you know, a decluttered, nice looking home, that's really not the end goal. I mean, it's a lovely byproduct of decluttering, but the purpose of decluttering is to hopefully make us take a good hard look at our relationship with stuff. So if somebody is going through their bathroom and they're having trouble with all the face creams and the toners and the face masks and all these beauty products that they were promised by the company is going to radically change and transform their lives, ask yourself as you're having these issues, as you're having these troubles, as you're struggling with these items, ask yourself, well, did these things do what they said they were going to do?
Yeah.
Did they add to my life? Did they make my skin look this, that, or the other thing, whatever you were trying to change? And most often, the answer is no. The answer is no. And so if we take that moment when we're decluttering to like sit with that uncomfortable feeling in our gut of, oh, I bought this on impulse. It's snake oil, perhaps, like it's not working. I think that's a real key for informing future purchasing decisions.
I think where people get stuck with stuff is there's a lot of guilt and a lot of shame. So it's like, I didn't use this cream enough. It's not working because I did something wrong and I spent too much money and it's all my fault. And we go into a shame spiral. But from what I'm hearing from you is like, maybe you were sold something that was never going to deliver that, right? It's almost like put that frustration back on the thing that we were promised from the manufacturer instead of putting it on yourself, because that is what so many people do. Like I've heard so many clients say, well, I just spent the whole time cleaning out my closet, beating myself up because I spent all this money on this purse or these shoes or this dress, right? So an example like that, I bought an expensive dress that I'm never going to wear, but I'm having trouble letting go of it. What would you say to somebody like that?
I would say, first off, ask yourself why you bought the expensive dress in the first place. Right. What were you trying to... So I love to talk about the concept of the aspirational self. A lot of us, and especially us women, we buy... And I used to be guilty of this hard. I buy these fashion items, number one, because I don't have a strong sense of my own personal fashion. But number two, because I am trying to emulate a look that I see all these other people having. And I think it's not the look that I want. It's the easy breezy effortlessness that their lives seem to have. That's what they're
feeling. We're trying to get to the feeling through the stuff And we're not really being honest about the feeling we're trying to get to sometimes.
Yeah. Like, it's not about the expensive dress. It's about the person you're trying to be like or become through the thing.
The dress.
And so for somebody who has a closet full or just even one thing, an aspirational purchase for the person that they're not actually, that they aren't actually that person, I would say, you know, the key to freedom from impulse buying this stuff and then having it sit in your closet, the key to freedom from that cycle is to sit with that feeling and get to the why did you buy this dress in the first place?
Yeah. And what is the feeling we're trying to get to? And do we need the stuff to get to the feeling? You know, sometimes it's just about we're feeling a low sense of confidence. We're feeling like we want more carefree, fun experiences. And that's what we're being sold through the clothes, through the face cream, through the expensive gadgets. It's that ease, that carefree feeling. And often when we're feeling stressed and overburdened by responsibility, what do? Well, we go online and we look for stuff because it becomes like a dopamine hit we're trying to get. That's an escape from our own stress and our own feelings of insecurity sometimes.
Just a little quick story here. Back when my daughters were in preschool, I would have to drive to the preschool, get out of the car, mingle with the other mothers before picking my daughters up. And I always would look at the other mothers and they were just so effortlessly chic. I mean, they had on the right jeans with the right boots and the part where the ankle like shows always looked great. I still don't know how to do that. And so I was buying the clothes to try and look like these people. Now that I say it out loud, it just sounds so absolutely bonkers. But I think more of us do it.
I think it's relatable. And I think that whole thing you're talking about, where especially when your kids are in elementary school and you're lining up with the other moms, I think this whole thing is fun to bring to light because I think so many moms go through that comparison. Like, why do they not look tired? Why do they look so put together? How are they getting their kid to all these functions without looking like a stress case? Yeah. Right. And it's that comparing all the time that really puts those ideas in your head. I got to buy all that stuff and keep up with the Joneses type of feeling.
And like the moment that I realized that I'm not a skinny jeans and ankle boots type of woman. I am a yoga pants, oversized sweatshirt, and sneakers type mom. Embraced and accepted that, I took the pressure that I was putting on myself, it's self-imposed, off. Like, I am me.
It is really about what we call radical acceptance. It's about getting to the point where you can just accept yourself. You can accept that, you know, those types of clothes and this types of thing, it's not going to work for me and my lifestyle and what I'm doing each day and who I am and what I feel comfortable wearing. So then it becomes easier to let that stuff go too, because you stop beating yourself up about why can't I wear this and feel better too. I mean, really, if you get down to it, we beat ourselves up a lot if you think about it. And our stuff is sort of just an extension of that.
That's right. Well, Risa, when you came on my show, we talked about how we and others tend to beat ourselves up. And we all need to just stop that. We need to just stop.
Right. All right. So let's go through a couple more quick tips for if you're feeling stuck decluttering and if you're feeling like you're struggling with all these heavy duty emotions lurking underneath this stuff. You know, what are some other practical ways you can do it in small doses?
I hate to plug my own book, but I'm going to do it. In my book, Sustainable Minimalism, I have a 52-week decluttering plan. And of all of the book, the 52-week decluttering plan is what I've received the most positive feedback on. It takes an entire house and splits it up into 52 weeks. And so the house, the pieces, so you're doing one thing a week. The pieces are so unbelievably manageable and accessible to everybody that after a year, it sounds like, oh, a year, it's going to take me a year. Well, if on one week, the goal for the week is your nightstand, I think you can handle it. And by the end, your house is going to be all done. You won't have missed an area. I do always suggest, you know, if a 52-week decluttering plan is for you or not, whatever and however you choose to do it, just play the long game. You're not going to have, depending on the status of your home and depending on how many years you've lived there and depending on whether you have other people's stuff, you're storing it in your attic or your basement, it's not going to be done in a weekend.
Yeah.
Or it's not going to be done right and well in a weekend. So I always suggest just play the long game. And also ask yourself too, you know, if you have areas in your home that really weigh on you emotionally. So an example here would be, I interviewed someone on my podcast, her husband passed away unexpectedly. And so she just took all of his stuff, all his shirts, all his guitars. He was a big guitarist, all of his stuff. She just packed it in the attic. She just put it in the attic because she knew emotionally she wasn't able to deal with it at that moment, which was probably a very smart choice. But as the years went on, every time she passed the attic door, she had a feeling of extreme anxiety in her chest.
Yeah.
She knew it was all there. She knew she had to deal with it, but she couldn't muster up the mental, the emotional
courage.
Strength.
Yeah. It takes a lot of courage to tackle that, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So for people who, the tip here is for people who have that sort of situation, which I know so many of us do, right? Somebody dies and then we just absorb all their stuff. I suggest you ask for a buddy's help, somebody who you can rely on when the going gets tough, because especially with sentimental items or deceased family members' items, it can and will get tough. So have somebody do it with you.
That's a good plan. You know, sometimes some of us just need someone. They don't even need to be sorting the stuff with us, just hanging out in the room as someone you can talk to or who's just there. A lot of people find that decluttering and organizational tasks work better with somebody just witnessing it because it gives us some kind of time parameters. It doesn't feel endless. It gives us a feeling like we're not in this completely on our own. I think another part where people get stuck with stuff is making the decisions, right? So they'll get everything out and about and they're trying to sort it and they're trying to put a box for charity. And they just get stuck on the decision. Should I keep it? Should I not keep it? Is there a quick tip you have to make those decisions so that you can process a lot of stuff?
Yes. So before the pandemic, I called it the quarantine box. And now I need a new name for it because quarantine box.
It sounds a little strange now, but it made sense then.
But the quarantine box is essentially a box, however big you want it to be, maybe a repurposed Amazon box or something. You put it out of sight in your home. So maybe that's the basement. Maybe that's a closet that you don't go in often. And in the quarantine box, you put in any and every item you think you might want to get rid of, but you're not ready to do it yet. So maybe that spatula, maybe that fancy dress, whatever the thing is, you stick a little post-it note on it of the day you put it in the box. And then you put it in the box, you shut the door, you forget about it. That's the key. You got to forget about it. After 6 months from the date on that post-it note, if you have not used the item in the box, like physically used it, so you did not use the spatula for flipping pancakes, you did not wear the dress on your body and leave the house. Like if you didn't use the item for its utility, that's your key to let it go. Because how long has it been in your house? It's already been in quarantine in your house.
You've already forgotten about the stuff in there.
I hear a lot people are concerned about one day, like one day they might need to use this item. So put a date on it. And if you don't use it by that date, by that day, not one day, that day, it's time to go. And let me just say too, we live in a time in which goods are abundant. There are way too many goods on this planet. And so unless the item in question is a one-of-a-kind item or an extremely sentimental item, I'm willing to bet here and now that you can get your hands on it again.
Probably by tomorrow.
Yes,
it will probably show up tomorrow. It'll probably be a better version of that thing too, because things are changing rapidly. And they keep making better versions of all the things, even a spatula. So you can let it go. I have a version of that we use at our house. It's a big tote bag. And I actually hang it on the coat closet door by the front door. And I have everyone in the house add to it. And when that bag gets full, we just take it to the charity shop. But it gives people enough space because everyone's adding to it to pull it out if they want to. And we always do a final review. I do it with the kids where, hey, are you sure you want this to go? Because once it goes, can't get it back. And that might be something to incorporate. It's get the other people involved who live in your house more actively on a schedule where we're getting rid of the stuff we're not using. And it's not you forcing it upon them. It's like everyone has to buy into this. And when it's full, it goes and I'll take it. I think it's been helpful to teach kids that at an early age.
Yes, I 100% agree with that. I'll say that's still a work in progress in my house.
It's hard. My kids can be oddly sentimental about a lot of stuff.
Yeah, like that rock that they found at the bus stop. Like,
yeah, or a broken toy that we just can't let go of, you know? But then other things they'll just dump and you'll think, I gave that to you. Why are we throwing it away? But it's good to have those discussions and bring it out into the light and get them working on their relationship with stuff at an early age.
I totally agree because, you know, when my children were younger and they didn't really know, my habit was just to declutter their stuff when they weren't looking. As they've gotten older and as I've gotten wiser, I've realized that that's actually not what I should be doing. They should, everything that they own, everything that they bring into the house is an opportunity for them to flex their own decluttering muscle.
Yeah. And you're paving the path for them so that when they go off to college and they're living on their own or they have their own household now, they have some framework that they've practiced. Well, thank you so much, Stephanie, for all your practical tips. This has been a really fun and important conversation. Where can people find you?
Well, I have a podcast. It's called Sustainable Minimalists. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. We talk about minimalism, decluttering, intentional living, and more specifically, intentional living with an eco-friendly focus. So that's Sustainable Minimalists. I also have a book out by the same name, Sustainable Minimalism. And thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun.
It was. Take care and have a good rest of your week.
If you're enjoying tools discussed on the show, please visit risawilliams.com. There you can learn about upcoming episodes, you can check out my books, and you can sign up for my Get Stuff Done Goals group. I'm Risa Williams, and we're out of time for today. Thanks for listening.